Okay, Rachel Ross.
Is that good? Yeah. Okay. I really like to tell funny stories. I usually tell funny stories. Tonight, I'm workshopping a story I've never told before. It's not a funny story, but it's a good story. It has a good ending. And I feel really lucky to be able to tell it to you tonight. Many of our best stories come from the relationships that we have. My dad was a World War II Greatest Generation kind of guy, but very tamped down with his emotions because he survived a lot of hardship growing up in the Depression and that sort of thing. He was a fabulous dad. Very present, hands-on, always there for us, but not one for small talk, not one to probe emotions or things like that. And that bothered me as I grew older into a more sassy and an emotional kind of teenager. But I learned to live with it. My mom was just the opposite, creative and very outgoing. They had a fabulous relationship. And I came home from college for a visit in the 70s, and they had just sold their business. They had done very well, and they were contemplating retirement, and they had just moved into a very tall condo that they had bought in the newly formed Century City area of Los Angeles. They were on the 20th floor, and I came to visit. And the elevator ride up was super, super slow. And when I was alone in the elevator with my dad, it felt a little awkward because there was a lot of silence. And he seemed a lot more tamped down than usual. He was sort of reeling from not having this business anymore and trying to find purpose in the last third of his life. Of course, he didn't tell me this. He would tell my mom, that was his confidant, and she told me. It was a nice visit. We had a good visit, even though he was pretty seemed pretty morose most of the time. And on the last day of my visit, time to go back to college, he said he would help me with my bags, walk me down, down the elevator, and to the basement where my car was, and we got in the elevator, and it was pretty quiet, and we're going down 19, 18, and he asked me, "You got everything you need, Rocky?" And I said, yeah, I got everything, I'm good, and we're surrounded by mirrors in this little box, and I just kind of flippantly said, "Well, you got everything you need, Dad?" And something about being surrounded by the mirrors in that safe little box created some kind of change in his demeanor, and he burst into tears. And I had never seen my father cry. It was at once terrifying and a gift. And I hugged him, and I said, and he said, "Just be there for me." And I hugged him, and I said, "I will be there for you, Dad." And his tears drenched my shoulder, and I could feel him sobbing deeply, deeply, and the elevator's going slowly, 10, 9, 8, and he stiffens up, 6, 5, 4, and he wipes his tears, 3, 2, 1, stiff upper lip returns. The doors open to the basement. We walk out. We never spoke of that moment again. He helped me put the suitcases in my car. I drove away. We hugged and I drove away. And I thought, what a gift. It was so intense for me to see him in that way. I didn't know what he meant, just be there for me. But I knew that I would. I didn't know what it would entail, but I knew I would come through for him. He went on to create a fabulous third act in his life. He became a sculptor in marble and clay and became well known, and he and my mother traveled the world, and he learned a new language, and they had a wonderful retirement. And it wasn't until my older son reported a key change to me that I had to take some action, be there for him, and be there for society, because my older son said, "Mom, I don't want to drive in Grandpa's car anymore because he doesn't look left or right over his, for the blind spot, and people keep honking at us, and he goes really, really slow." So I had to arrange with the DMV anonymously to call him in to have him tested, and he didn't pass, and they took his license away. But it was the right thing to do. And slowly, after that, his zest for life kind of petered out, and he talked about it being time, he was ready to go, that sort of thing. My mom was still going. She loved to volunteer and go to the theater and everything, and then he was getting grumpier, and then she passed in her sleep at the age of 97. And after that, he really lost his zest for life. It took a real nosedive, and we realized that he couldn't really be alone in that condo anymore. He needed us to be there. I have brother and sister, but I was really the hands-on sibling. There's always one of those. And so we moved. I said, let him come live with me. I gave him my bedroom and my bed, and I put a cot in my son's room, which he didn't like, but that's what you do for family. And we rented out the condo, which gave us enough money to hire an aide, and we found a lovely woman from Belize named Alice who came and helped us care for him. And he had a condition, an enlarged prostate. It's not terminal, but it's super uncomfortable. Makes you feel like you gotta urinate all the time. Every 15 minutes, you have no peace. And my sister managed to get him on hospice, even though he wasn't terminal. And so a wonderful hospice nurse would come visit us, and she happened to be from Brazil. She was now an American citizen, but she was Brazilian, which was great. Those of you who know, I lived 3 years in Brazil, and I speak Portuguese, so it was wonderful to have Gilma there as well. And I worked out of my home. My kids went to school. I had Alice. I had Gilma. I had Dad. I was a project manager. I was a mom juggling a lot of things, and I was a daughter, and I spent time with him. And he got grumpier, and his language got saltier, and his refrain about wanting to go, wanting to it be his time, wanting to die, became more adamant. I'm getting there. One afternoon, it was springtime, he was already past 95, he was almost 99, and I had made some French onion soup from Trader Joe's, which he loved. I tried to do things that brought him pleasure. He loved Oprah. That would perk up his day. He was still learning a lot, and he did the New York Times crossword puzzle every day. He had a very sharp mind for certain things, but he was so miserable having to go to urinate all the time. It broke up his sleep. He was really miserable. And I had just served him this soup, and I sat down, and he looked at me, and he asked me directly to help him die because it was time and he was tired. And I had anticipated that question, And I knew what my answer would be, and I said, "Dad, that's not fair. You can't ask me to do that." But I said, "You still have agency, and you can do something that's called VSED, which is voluntarily stopping eating and drinking. That's legal. And if you do that, I will make sure that you never are uncomfortable or feel any pain. You just have to give me a sign when you're ready." And he looked at me. He had very piercing blue eyes, kind eyes, and he looked at me in a very knowing manner, and he nodded, and he went back to slurping his French onion soup. That was April. In May, he celebrated his 99th birthday, and he rallied because we had a party, and he was the center of attention, and people were peppering him with questions, and he told his war stories, and he told his stories of surviving the Depression and being an orphan in New York City and how he had put himself through law school. And his name was Leonard Joseph Ross. After his 99th birthday, he took a real nosedive, and he just was not very happy. And one morning in November, it was a Saturday, while we were helping him dress, he had a little mini stroke, which was not serious, but he kind of froze for a minute, and I could see a vacancy in his eyes, and then he came back, and we helped him to bed. And because he was on hospice, I had access to morphine, with a liquid morphine with a dropper. And we had at times given it to him at night to help him sleep so that he wouldn't feel the urge to urinate because of the enlarged prostate. And that morning, I helped him to bed, and I said, "I'll go get your breakfast." I ran to the kitchen. I made his black coffee and his buttered rye toast. And I came back with the tray. And my dad, laying in bed, looked at me, and he just went like that. He waved away the tray, and I put it down. And that day, I helped him sleep all day long and enter into a deep sleep with the morphine. And for the next 7 days, I did that, and he never felt any pain of hunger or dehydration. He would come to sometimes, and I would help him with the ice chips and Vaseline for his lips. And on the Wednesday after that Saturday, in the wee hours, he came to for a moment. And my brother-in-law had just finished painting a portrait of him. He's a well-known artist. It was a big portrait, a beautiful black and white sketch. And I showed it to him. I rested it lightly on his chest, and I said, "Dad, look, it's you. We're calling it Lenny the Lionhearted." And he came to, and he said, "It looks like I'm still looking in the mirror." And then I took it off his chest, and I said, "I love you, Dad." And he said, "I love you." And he said, "Thank you." And those were his last words. And the following Saturday, he passed gently. And I called the Neptune Society, which was his prearranged plan, and two nice young men came in a van. And it's an awkward thing to have that final goodbye and have somebody wheeled through your hallway, your living room, on a gurney in a body bag. And I didn't quite know, you know, what to do, but I just wanted to extend that moment. So I followed the gurney down the side of our building on the and I got to the carport, and it felt like the right thing to do. I've never been in the military. I've never served, but I just decided to go like this and stand at attention. And at that very moment, my neighbor, who was a Vietnam vet, was coming back from walking his dog, and a basset hound named the General. And he saw me like this, and he saw the gurney, the body bag, and he saluted and stood at attention, and so did the dog. Well, the dog, the General sat. The General heeled to his master, and we stayed like that as the van pulled away and disappeared down the street. It was a humble little honor guard for Leonard J. Ross, and I was really honored that I was able to be there for him. Now, there's a very quick epilogue to this story, because in February of the following year, 2013, I read about Barbara Mancini. She was an ER nurse in Philadelphia, my age, who was caring for her father, 93-year-old Jack Yarbrough, and he was a World War II veteran. He had a Bronze Star from the Battle of the Bulge, and he was very strong-willed, and he was now 93 and very ill, and he was on hospice, and he told his daughter, "I do not want to die in the hospital." And 60 Minutes did a piece on this later. And Barbara Mancini was caring for her dad in the same way that I had cared for mine. And Jack said to his daughter at one point, when she had the morphine in her hand and the syringe doser, he said, "Give me the bottle." He was on hospice. He had less than 6 months to live. And he said, "Give me the bottle." And she gave it to him, and he drank the whole thing. And then he laid back, and she sat with him, and he fell into a deep sleep as they talked. And she did not think to call the hospital or the doctor, because that would have been against his wishes. And 2 hours later, her hospice nurse came, and she casually told the nurse what happened. The nurse went out into the street, used her cell phone, called the police, and Barbara Mancini was arrested and handcuffed and taken away, and her father was taken to the hospital and put all kind of tubes and everything, and he woke up pissed as hell, with salty language, and he was tearing the wires out and everything. It's on 60 Minutes. And Barbara went through a year of legal problems, only practically lost her house, had $100,000 in legal debt, and after a year and a half, the case was thrown out. And I just want to say thank you, California voters, because we passed the Death with Dignity Act in 2015, and after court challenges, it became effective in July of 2016. So no one in California will have to endure what Barbara Mancini and her father did, and anyone in California who's asked by a loved one to be there for them will be able to do so with honor and love. Thank you.